Welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And today, actually, this has been a weird week for this, where I've had multiple people come up and say that they heard me on the radio. And I had just kind of had this bizarre thought where nobody listens. And I was kind of wondering, like, does anybody actually listen? Because in a town this size, people kind of happen to find the radio and find the radio station. And so they'll come up and say, I heard you talking to so-and-so. That was really good. I had people come up this week talking about it. So it's good that, well, at least that I'm talking to people, the handful of people who actually listen to the show.
Right.
So that's that. But
well, I guess, did it change because they could actually see something? They saw a clip?
That may have been it. Because I took the clip that that George shot of the two of us, which I couldn't have looked less comfortable in front of the camera. I seriously that was bad. I don't know, you look good, you look comfortable. I look like I was about ready to get punched in the head.
Well, you know, it's funny, we didn't script that little
promo,
but I've seen a couple of the other ones that the station has done.
Yep.
And
they're scripted.
Yeah.
Other people have scripted ones, and we have Bill Jennings walking in here and going, hey, can you guys record a promo? All right, 3, 2, 1, go. Like, all right, yes, I can be funny on command, but I need a little bit of material. Like, there's not enough material in this room for me to make jokes about.
But let's be honest, we don't script the show.
No, so we don't.
It sort of makes sense.
I have an hour. Like, okay, so in an hour, if I say 4 or 5 funny things, perhaps I'm considered funny in real life. Okay, so my funny things to time speaking ratio is like
15 minutes.
12, so, 15 minutes?
Yeah, 30-second promo.
30 seconds.
What are the odds?
I got to just find funny.
That is a challenge.
I don't know. I mean, I'm like situationally funny. I'm not like funny on command.
All right, well.
It's like, you know, I don't know. I don't know, man. I just don't know. So, but yeah, so anyway, we had that little 30-second video that was kind of rough. I think I have felt more comfortable waiting in the dentist's office to have a root canal done than I was in front of the camera, which is weird because I've been on the camera an awful lot. But for whatever reason, that thing, I don't know, I was just bothered by it. But anyway, it is what it is. It's fall now. I wouldn't have known it was fall except for the fact that we have like fall decorations here in the studio.
Yes, we do.
So it's that, which means baseball playoffs, which is fun. The stat that kept getting thrown out over and over and over, well, I guess for a couple times in the wild card games, was this is only the blank time this has happened in an elimination game. And I have a hard time considering a one game winner take all game to be on par with you've been beating the snot out of each other for 6 games and now you're playing game 7. Like, that to me feels a lot more like an elimination game than a match race, basically.
Well, yeah, there is a different vibe when you've battled for 6 games and now it's the game 7 sounds a little bit different than the wild card game, but the stakes are the same. And for a team like Oakland, who, you know, pushes towards 100 wins and then they lose once at home and they're out, I mean, that you really can't get much more pressure than that.
Right. It's and of course they started Sean Manaea, who is a footnote in Kansas City Royals history. Manaea was traded from the Royals to the A's in 2015.
And then he starts throwing no-hitters?
Ben Zobrist is who the Royals got. Did the Royals win the championship in 2015 without Zobrist?
Probably not.
I don't know.
The guy did everything.
Yeah, so Manaea was a part of Royals history. He was a first-round draft pick out of Valparaiso. Has had a very good career, but then goes up against Tampa and their leadoff man, who's missed, close to half the season with injuries, who proceeds to hit 2 bombs on fastballs away and really quiet the Oakland crowd. And that one was kind of, in a lot of ways, over before it began.
And that's surprising to me because I saw a little bit of the beginning of that game. And, of course, it's an afternoon game in Oakland. You've got the tough sun and you've got this big lefty up there who looks imposing. I mean, he just looks like a pitcher who's going to be nasty.
We were talking about it when we were watching the game. Manaea is Samoan, grew up in Indiana, which kind of, that doesn't really compute all that well. But when you look at Sean Manaea, he's got tattoo sleeves on his arms. He looks like if the Oakland A's were going to have a pitcher, he looks like he would just be the perfect Northern California pitcher. Left-handed, big dude, tatted up, like he's like he fits in. And so when I looked up his bio the other day, I'm like, this would be a guy that was born in Northern California, Oregon, Hawaii. Nope, Indiana.
Yeah, he's like the new version of Barry Zito.
Okay. Yeah.
He's the evolution of Barry Zito.
But he throws way harder than Zito did.
Right. But he's that ace lefty. And so yes. That's what was surprising about the whole thing was him giving up multiple home runs.
It was bizarre. He had been back in five games from the DL, hadn't given up three home runs in any of those games, and proceeded to do it in the playoffs. And the A's just couldn't really recover from it. Now you have a situation where Oakland, whose players make slightly south of, on average, $3 million a year, which by Major League Baseball standards is they're destitute.
Quite.
And then you have Tampa, which these guys are talking about, and I quote their center fielder, Kevin Kiermaier, they're talking about sticking it to the man.
That being the Astros?
I think that was sticking it to the man, as in the bigger teams with the bigger payrolls. They have a $53 million payroll. So, I mean, by baseball standards, is that small? By normal human standards, I think any of us would probably give multiple vital organs to make $2 million in a year.
Yeah, I don't think they're sticking it to the man yet. If they go through Houston and come out on top in that series, then they've got something to talk about.
I do not see that happening.
Neither do I.
I would love the curiosity factor. And as a fan of the Dodgers in 1988, when that was truly a team, if you look back at that 88 team, and even now, if you said to somebody, okay, you have two teams, and one had Mark McGwire, and one had Jose Canseco, and Dave Stewart was on the mound, and Bobby Welch, and like you throw all these names out and all these stats, and then you throw the Dodgers out where you have Steve Sachs and Rick Dempsey and Franklin Stubbs and Jeff Hamilton and Kirk Gibson and a guy named Hershiser on the mound who was out of his mind for the last 2 months of the season. But if you were to talk to somebody you didn't know any better and say, okay, these two teams played in the World Series, which team won? You, or these two teams, Dodgers, Mets, played in the LCS, which team won? You would have taken the Mets and you would have taken the A's. And that's not how it happened. That's why they play the games. So with that in mind, we haven't had a really good fun upset in a while.
In baseball?
It'd be neat.
It would.
I don't see it. The Dodgers had a good team in 88, using them as the example. They had Hershiser, they had Tim Belcher, they had Tim Leary. They had guys who could go up and throw and eat innings. If I'm looking at teams now, that wouldn't even compare to Verlander, Gerrit Cole, and Greinke. Houston has an abundance of riches there, and you never quite know what's going to happen. That's why they play the games, but I don't see that one going past five.
Yeah, and not to mention their batting order is just prolific all the way up and down. What a group of bats they have. So that would be an enormous upset. But either way, we're going to get to the World Series, and either the Yankees or the Astros or both aren't going to be there.
Right.
So we're going to have some exciting clashes one way or another.
Right. I don't know. I'd say out of the American League, the Astros seem to be the one. Out of the National League, after watching last night, where the Dodgers picked up a win 6-0 over the Nationals, and we're recording this on Friday, tomorrow Saturday, or you might be listening on Sunday. But the Dodgers sent out Walker Buehler, who doesn't get nearly enough publicity for being really as good as he is. But they sent Walker Buehler out. And if I'm looking at the Dodgers, the amount their success has far less to do with their ability in free agency and far more to do with scouting and development. Kershaw, first round draft pick of the Dodgers, had nothing to do with money. Walker Buehler, first round draft pick of the Dodgers, had nothing to do with money. Now, they've been able to keep Kershaw because of money. You look at Justin Turner, released by the Mets. They were able to sign him again because of money, but they've picked him off the scrap heap. Max Muncy, released by Oakland. He's not even arbitration eligible. I don't even know what they're paying him. Probably not even $1 million yet. And he's hitting 35 homers and scoring 101 runs in a season. So the Jock Peterson, homegrown. Like, you look at up and down, Bellinger, homegrown, third-round draft pick. up and down that roster, it's guys who are their guys. And the reason they're busting the budget with their roster is because of their ability to not go out and sign the big name, but to, okay, we grew this guy, now we're going to retain him. And if you look at, you know, the Red Sox are on the hunt for a general manager right now, with Dave Dombrowski being let go. But you look at some of the moves that were made further back where the Red Sox decide we're not going to go after Lester. We're going to pursue David Price. And that in some ways has paid off. They've won championships. So David Price, Chris Sale, those neither of those are homegrown guys. So now you're in a situation if you're the Red Sox where and this the Sale thing has more to do with Dombrowski. The Price thing has nothing to do with it. But you look at it where you have young guys who are now becoming arbitration or free agency eligible. And if you're the Red Sox, you have no chance of signing all of them.
That's right. And of course, there's J.D. Martinez, who's also not homegrown.
Right.
And now you have that clash of the high-priced free agents coming in and then the homegrown guys who are now starting to make more and more money. You're right. Now you're forced with a decision that's very tough. Can you keep Martinez and Betts?
Well, what's your? You don't really have an option with Martinez. The only option is trading him.
Well, he has the option to opt out.
Okay.
So if he opts out, you know, then what happens?
There are only so many teams in baseball that can sign a guy who's going to command the amount of money that he is. Which, I mean, that becomes a greater problem with salary disparity and potential work stoppage coming up in a year and a half, 2 years from now. But and baseball does need to fix that. But before we get really into the vortex of what's wrong with the game, we should probably enjoy this year, the playoffs. The Red Sox have a lot to fix, though.
They do. But getting back to the Dodgers, I want to ask you about Walker Buehler, because if you haven't seen him yet, great young pitcher who is a little bit slight of frame, but he's out there throwing gas. So uh-huh. he's really fun to watch. But I wanted to ask you about him at the plate last night, because it was quite an interesting situation and choice for the Dodgers, I thought. Bottom of the fourth, Buehler's cruising along on the mound. Dodgers are up 1-0, but now he's hitting, and it's first and third, one out.
Yep.
And he is up there trying to bunt.
Right.
But now the count goes to 1-2.
Yes.
And so before you know it, I look up, and he's trying to, on the 1-2 pitch, he's trying to bunt a ball that's down by his ankles.
Yeah.
And, of course, he fouls out on the bunt attempt. But if I'm manager Roberts, or if you're manager Roberts, are you having him bunt there at 1-2, man on first and third with one out?
I question having him bunt first and third with one out because my run probability, I don't think goes up, and they have stat heads and numbers that will bear all this stuff out. And frankly, I don't know, but I have to imagine that my chances of scoring a run are higher with him swinging away in that situation than they are bunting and now relying on the number one hitter to drive a run across. To me, the incremental benefit of having two guys in scoring position and giving the run up or giving the out up, that's not worth it. But I was sitting there I was falling asleep. I'm not going to lie. I was up in bed watching it through eyelids that were closing. And I thought he bunted fair 1-1. I thought it hit the plate.
It hit the plate, but it sort of bounced backwards. And so as the catcher fielded it in the air, it was in foul territory.
Okay.
That's what happened.
Okay.
But
because I had the volume all the way down too.
But I agree with you. He's not a good hitter. Okay. This year he's batting .085. He's 5-59. He doesn't have any sacrifice flies. He does have 3 sacrifice bunts, but he does have a home run and he does have 5 hits. So first and third, one out. Okay. If you really want to try and bunt 1-1, fine. But 1-2, I'm going to see if he can put the ball in play and hit a sacrifice fly.
Just do something, anything.
Because you're right. You the best you're looking at is 2 outs, second and third.
Yeah, and
let the guy, if he has the power to hit a home run, he's already done that this year, let him try and hit a fly ball to get up 2-0.
It's always mind-blowing when you look at major league pitchers who, okay, the guy's hitting .085, all right, 5-59, as you mentioned. But even with his atrocious batting average, he still has managed to get one out. Whereas I can take batting practice and not come anywhere near it. Maybe I'm topping out, I don't know, 270, 280. and I can still hit. And so it gives you a level of appreciation for even the guys who suck are way better than I'm not including you as the rest of us, but even the guys who suck are way better than the rest of us who haven't played professionally.
Right. And I mean, the only thing is you figure he did a bunch of hitting at some point as a youngster, and he's a world-class athlete, and he's watching swings and studying swings all day long. So he's looking at what he needs to do. So he has a clue.
Right. Well, and they get to take BP.
Right. Like, especially as a national leaguer. So he takes more BP than the American League.
You take BP. You get to mess around on the tee if you want. Like, you have time.
Right.
So
you have nothing but time.
Right. There's no reason not to do it. So anyway, yeah. So would I have bunted him? I don't know that I would have bunted him at any point in the at-bat, honestly.
I don't know if I would have.
No desire.
0-1, 1-1, but I definitely would not have 1-2.
As I was falling asleep, one of my last thoughts was, I don't know why I would bunt him here. So, so anyway, all right, I was going to say something, but my rambling thoughts in my brain sometimes aren't worth saying, oddly enough. So before we take a quick break and are joined by Coach Stuart Pepper of the Bedford High boys soccer team, I wanted to get into the NBA challenge rule.
Yes.
New thing, you get one challenge in 46 minutes. Was that correct?
Yeah, because in the last 2 minutes of regulation, officials initiate the review.
Yeah, so you get a challenge that can exist on a foul or an out-of-bounds play, and those can only happen if it's kind of like in the NFL. You can throw the challenge flag prior to the next play taking place. So the same basic thing occurs here in the NBA, but the interesting thing, and you'll appreciate that, the coaches are being instructed, at least so it appears in the early going, by their stats teams. If you see something that's wrong, and you get one regardless of whether it's right or wrong. This isn't the NFL where you keep it.
If you're successful.
If you're wrong, you're wrong. If you're right, you're right. So if you're at a point when there's 3 minutes left in the game and there's something that was possibly egregious, hey, why not?
Absolutely. I mean, a foul or a non-foul or a foul call late in the fourth quarter, I mean, that's really what's can be a game changer. And the other thing you can do is you can challenge a goaltend. And so at any time, if you can get an extra bucket and the officials missed it, then you want to do that. The NBA referees are great at signaling the review on a goaltending or not. So I doubt that the coaches will have to use the challenge that often on a goaltending. But one of the other things we saw in that article was the signal that the coaches give for this challenge, yep, which I think is going to be interesting because, as you described it, what they have to do is put their finger up in the air and make a circular motion.
It's like a home run.
Right. To say, let's turn the TV cameras around at center court and let's review this play. But the adjustment that these coaches are going to have to make is that that's what everybody does right now already. The players and coaches always do that on a ball that's going out of bounds when they want to try to prompt the officials and nudge them towards initiating a review. So they're going to have to learn to only do that when they really want when they're willing to basically throw their challenge flag.
Right. And you wonder at what point somebody's going to bid on a painting without actually wanting it. And somebody, I was just rubbing my nose. Nope, sir. You just bought that Picasso for $2.8 million.
Right.
Like, you wonder at what point somebody is going to give up a timeout, or like the analog in the NFL is, I put my hand up to catch the ball, but maybe I signaled a fair catch, maybe I didn't.
Right. Maybe I was just waving at the crowd.
When you see it, you've seen it sometimes where it's not a convincing fair catch sign, and the guy sort of puts his hand up and kind of half waves and then runs. And the
gray area.
Yeah, how gray? Charcoal. The defense has kind of given up on the play at that point, and they run it back and whatever. But you now start to wonder, okay, if there is a play that is challenged, first of all, if you're a player, nobody's going to pay attention to you. The only one anybody's going to pay attention to is the coach. But is there something that might potentially be better where, like, do we give them the little things that they use to land planes at the airport, lightsabers, something.
A whistle.
A keychain. Yeah, that might not work. But, do you give him a rabbit's foot? He gets to throw that out on the court.
And will they have it in their sock like Coach Belichick?
I don't know. He can't put it in his sleeve because those are cut off.
That's right.
So I don't know. So yeah, the NBA is experimenting with challenges. What precipitated this?
Well, I think
just wanting to be with the cool kids.
The one play that comes to mind was in the playoffs where I believe it was the finals, Cleveland and Golden State, and was it LeBron who stepped up in the lane to take a charge, and there was question about whether it would be reviewed. Can you review it? Can you review if his heels are on the semicircle? That's the one play that I remember where they start to talk about, all right, we need to revamp this challenge system and figure out an opportunity where the coaches have a chance to challenge one play, because whether it's that sort of a, you know, was there a charge or not, or was Durant out of bounds when he was running along the yellow paint in the corner? Do you remember that one?
Right.
And they missed one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like if the officials who are excellent miss one call that's vital, the coach can say, hey, guys, we got to take a look at that.
Right. The other consideration, too, and we've seen it with baseball where now people are, and you see it with football, too, where challenges, the percent of success on challenges is being measured as that's a measurement of, is he a good coach or a good manager? Like, that was when I'm reading the thing about Ned Yost retiring from baseball, and I go to look up his stats on Baseball Reference. That's a manager stat, is number of challenges that were overturned. So, I mean, that's going to be a thing, but that's also, all right, if you're a coach now, are you wearing an earpiece? Is that even legal? Where somebody upstairs can say, hey, dude, do the little thing with your hand.
Well, yeah. Well, I think, was it the Steelers-Bengals game when I heard that the Steelers had hired a coach specifically to decide whether to challenge a play, and they challenged a play in the first half and failed?
You're so fired.
The guy who's fired for that job, you got to
keep... Step into my office.
You got to keep his stats as well.
Right. Yeah, step into my office. All right, we'll take a quick break. Come right back with Coach Stuart Pepper of the Bedford High Boys Soccer Program. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Vector 105.1. Lauren Fox, Andrew Hansen, and we are joined by a defending state champion here. That is Stuart Pepper, the coach of the Bedford High boys soccer team. Coach, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. Well, as I mentioned in the intro, last year you won a state title. And then, of course, as happens in high school, you can't keep them forever. You lost 11 players to graduation. And when you lose some of the really big names, and Ryan Slijewski is one who comes to mind, how do you take a mindset that you're heading into what might feel like a rebuilding season?
Yeah, despite the fact we lost, you know, half our squad, you know, we still have 11 players who experienced the championship season. And, like, this experience is just so priceless in terms of understanding what it takes to be a champion, you know, and understanding the hard work it takes, the teamwork that it takes, but the whole experience, and just to have those 11 players go through it and experience it and understand, you know, the extreme lengths we need to go to achieve success. I think that is, you know, it's priceless. So I think we're very fortunate to have, you know, those 11 players back.
It's nice to have that leadership. It's also nice to have people who've been through it with you before. And when I said rebuilding, that implies that the cupboard's bare, but we know that's not the case. For our listeners, who are some of the names, and I've reviewed some of the stats and game recaps, so I have a good idea, but if somebody hasn't seen them, who are the impact players on the roster?
Well, we have, like, a good group of seniors that are just taking a great leadership role that are impacting games in a big way. You know, we have Vitor Rodriguez and Zach Burrow and Nate Sotera as a dynamic trio up front, and they're causing havoc, you know, all season with their skill and their strength and their athletic ability. And, you know, to have those three as our front line, you know, and with their experience, but also with their skill, you know, I certainly believe we have the strongest, you know, attack in the state, you know, because of what they bring to the program, you know. And backing that up, we have Aiden Wishers, you know, who's like a three-year starter as goalkeeper who brings such confidence and assurance and leadership, you know, as a goalkeeper. And to have you know, a senior goalkeeper with his ability and if his experience counts for a lot, you know, then that helps. But having said all that as well, we have just got a core of juniors that like, played, you know, in the championship season, you know, midfielders, Matty Flanagan and James Poshman, you know, dominant in our midfield. And we have got a really strong defence that's only conceded 2 goals in 10 games, you know, led by Drew Middleton and Jake Bowden and Nate Barova. Are just, you know, very, very strong in what they do. So when you couple our seniors with our strength of juniors, you know, we really have like a strong core that, you know, we can count on.
We are here with Coach Stuart Pepper of the Bedford High boys soccer team. And you talk about that core, and the first name that you mentioned was Vitor Rodriguez, who's got 12 goals so far on the season. When the team is playing well, and by and large, they're beating teams by 4 or 5, even 8 goals, how do you ensure that everybody who's out there with you remains focused on what they have to do? And I have to imagine for your goalie, Wishard, too, it's also a challenge remaining focused when the ball is so predominantly in the offensive end.
Yeah, we're just like, we have a culture where we have like a culture of respect and playing with intensity, you know, and it doesn't matter who we're playing against or what we're doing, we maintain that intensity and respect, you know. So, you know, despite the fact we might be winning games easily, you know, we try to maintain those high standards and keep things going. It also allows us to, you know, to use, you know, our whole squad and get them in a really good, you know, playing experience. And some of the players with less, you know, varsity experience have had some really good time this season. And, you know, they're developing their games as a result. So, like, you know, as, you know, despite the fact we might be winning games quite handily, you know, we're still using it to help our team, you know, develop and, you know, and foster a good team spirit.
Now, Coach, you're sitting atop the standings at 9-0-1 after the first 10 games, and you have had a couple close games, including a 2-0 win over Hanover and the 1-1 tie against Wyndham. How has the team been able to grow and benefit from those close games this year?
Yeah, they're the games we love. They're the games we sort of see as like, you know, playoff type, you know, experiences. So we've loved playing them, you know, and unfortunately the Wyndham game was our one true low point of the season where we didn't quite click as a team. We didn't play well as a team. We met a strong Wyndham team that put us off our game. But I think through adversity, you learn, you know, greater and better things. And I certainly think, you know, from that game, we realized we weren't the finish high school. We realized where our weaknesses were. And we've worked hard at the practice and games. And, like, you know, since the Wyndham game, we've really played well. We've been firing. We've not conceded a goal since then. So I think through, you know, adversity, we've gained something. So we hope to, you know, to keep learning.
And Coach, we had the pleasure of broadcasting that 1-1 tie against Wyndham. And one of the fun things was seeing the comeback because Wyndham scored first and then Vero scored to tie it. What were those weaknesses that you were talking about that the team's been able to work on?
Sometimes I think we rely on our stronger players, you know, a little bit too much, and you know we allow them to, you know, have to have more touches on the ball. And you know, I think now we understand that if we are going to be a true champion team, we need to play, you know, through our team, and, you know, have less touches on the ball, play with speed, you know, and create, you know, spaces by, you know, by playing with a high tempo. And you know, and then we can mix that up with our skillful players who can show a bit of magic in that final third and get that balance right. You know, so I think that's what we're trying to work towards. You know, that magic ingredient of playing well, but at the same time playing well as a team.
Here with Coach Stuart Pepper, the Bedford High boys soccer program. And Coach, one thing that you talk about, but it's easy to say it, but it's hard to put it into play, is chemistry and camaraderie and togetherness and functioning as a team. How do you put that into practice with the team that you have?
I just think as a program, we've worked hard over 13 years at developing our culture. And you know, there's a culture that we've developed on the field and off the field where we have respect for each other. We have discipline. You know, we want to be seen as like doing the right thing on off the field. And I think we take really great pride in what we do, and you know, the boys, you know, love playing for this program and love representing this program, and you know, and I think on top of all that, they have fun, you know, they enjoy themselves, and as a result of that, you know, we get that balance right, you know, by having fun, but also maintaining high discipline and high standards in everything we do, and how we looked, you know, to everyone that sees us.
As you mentioned, some of the players on the team and some of the need to balance having fun and working hard, who are some of the personalities that you have on the roster?
We have lots, you know, but two to spring to my mind are two new players to our team, Alex Kim and Avery Hudson. You know, they're both seniors, both have, you know, have done their time in the, you know, the JVs, and you know, have come to the team. They look like they're loving themselves, but they're funny lads. You know, they're always smiling and cracking jokes and timing their one-liners in the right way, and they bring a lot of fun to the, you know, the program, which has added to us, you know, what we have. You know, there are other, you know, other players like James Poshman and Roman Snegish, the goalkeeper. They both make us laugh, but you know, in different ways. You know, they're very serious type people, but you know, we have fun with them, and you know, they enjoy, you know, the camaraderie we have with those two.
I don't know. It's interesting to think back to when I was playing sports in high school and who some of the characters were, and when the coaches actually thought we were funny, and when they just rolled their eyes at us.
Yeah, that happens sometimes, but mostly not.
Yeah. You talk about good timing, but that's part of comedy is timing. And
exactly, yeah.
If your timing's off, it can really backfire. So here with the Bedford High boys soccer coach, Stuart Pepper. For the rest of the season, of course, 5 games from now, and I really feel like every coach that we talk to, when we talk to them and say, oh, you have a game against Central in a few weeks, and everybody has the exact same thing. We're worried about the next game. We're worried about the next opponent. Who are some of the tougher opponents for you coming down the road this season?
So we play Nash Yourself on Thursday, and then the Central the following Tuesday. So we have like two huge games for us, you know. Which will mean, you know, whether we get to, you know, number one, you know, for the playoffs. But both of those teams are like high quality and filled with quality players as well. So like, you know, we know that they're going to be probably our two sternest tests. You know, and going back to back, it's going to be pretty intense but pretty exciting. So we're looking forward to those games. But we also have to respect also that, you know, the other teams we play, because on the day, any team is capable of winning a, you know, a soccer game. So we have to be at our best at all times.
Coach, we're looking forward to broadcasting that game against Nashua South this upcoming Thursday, the 10th. Now, what do you think the keys to that game will be? Will it be, is there anything specific about South, or is it going to be what you're talking about earlier in terms of improving that overall balance of individual moves with, you know, possessing the ball as a team?
I think you hit the nail on the head perfectly there. You know, we have to play to our strengths and play to the way that we want to play. We also know that they have some very creative players that can open us up. They actually beat us in a scrimmage, you know, before the season started, and some of their players really looked like they could, you know, expose, you know, some of our weaknesses. So, you know, we've worked hard at that, you know, during the season. We're going to make sure that we can stop their, you know, creative players, and we know that with our front three and our strong midfield, that we have the ability to actually break open, you know, Nashua South. So, but we fully respect them, and we know it's going to be, you know, our toughest game.
It is a long road to get to a championship, as you well know. And first, you got to worry about your class at 11 o'clock. So, Coach, well, it's been a pleasure having you, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care, Coach.
Cheers. Take care. Bye.
That was Coach Stuart Pepper of the Bedford High Boys Soccer Program. Always a great interview, and always sheds a lot of light on the program as a whole. And I have to imagine for the coaches who teach, whether it's Coach Matthews or Coach Winning or whatever, first of all, like, we're kind of busting into their day a little bit. But for them, it's, you know how you get, and I know how I get if I have a game at the end of the day. Like, it's hard to focus. You're focused on work. And, or I remember being a kid and like school is just a formality. So for the teachers who also coach, that's a real challenge. It's got to be.
It is, but he's used to it now. He's led this program for a long time, done a great job. But it is fun to hear him. And I just think listening to him when he's talking about focusing in on the discipline and the skills, you know, he certainly has that intensity, but just the way that he sounds, it's a relaxed intensity.
Yeah.
So it's a good balance, and you know, no wonder they're doing so well after losing 11 seniors off that championship team.
And he also seems to have a good deal of appreciation for kids, because And we've talked about this on the program, for as much as people like to say things like kids these days are different, kids have changed, again, they deal with way more things, these kids do, than we ever had to deal with when we were kids, whether it's socially, whether it's social media, you name it. And it's always nice when you have a chance to talk to somebody who is a tactician of the game, as Coach Pepper quite obviously is, but also somebody who kind of takes the time to realize that these are kids and that this is fun for them to be able to do it, and appreciates that. But also some of the fun that goes with it is the opportunity to contend for a title at the end of the season. So that was Coach Stuart Pepper of the Bedford High soccer program. And we'll take a quick break. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox, Andrew Hansen, and as usual, we are taking time out of the day of Bedford High football coach Zach Matthews coming in to join us today. Coach, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Always fun to talk a little football.
Yeah, let's do it, Coach. Let's get caught up on last week when the Bulldogs won 50-14 against Memorial to go to 4-0. Joseph Michael had another strong passing game, finishing 12-21 for 257 yards and 3 touchdowns. What did you like about his performance in that game?
Well, you know, to be honest, the whole thing with, and this goes back to preseason and trying to make that quarterback decision on who, you know, who's going to be the best leader for our team. But, you know, it seems to be right now everybody's game plan when they're playing us is to load the box and try to blitz a lot of guys, send a lot of pressure. I mean, it's not a secret that we have some senior offensive linemen who can do a pretty good job. And so I think right now what people are really saying to us is we're going to try to take your running game away, and we're going to try to make your sophomore quarterback beat us. And, you know, Joe's doing a nice job finding some of those one-on-one matchups and putting our athletes in a good position to make some plays and make good decisions under pressure.
Yeah, I've noticed how there's a lot of one-on-one coverage on the outside because of teams, of, you know, crowding the box. But you still have to make the connection and make the pass and have it be accurate and have it be caught. And, you know, Michael didn't have a great performance in that first game of the season. He was, in terms of passing, he was just 6 of 19 for 27 yards. So how has he improved so much in these last three games? Because he's had three games in a row where he's been really efficient as a passer.
Well, I mean, I think that's one of the things that we saw from Joe throughout the offseason. When you talk about our summer workouts and our preseason, is the kid just is a sponge for information and processing coverages and things like that. And so, you know, we continue to see him develop on a week-to-week basis. I think, you know, one of the big things to keep in mind with that week one performance is, you know, it's the first time out for everybody. That was his first varsity start. So I think with that comes a lot of nerves. And that being said, up until 2 days before that first game, he was splitting reps with other quarterbacks. You know, that quarterback decision went right down to the wire. And so what we've seen from Joe in the past 3 weeks is, you know, now he's getting all of the repetitions with the one. Now he's got 4 games under his belt. And when you're getting all of the practice reps, when you're getting game reps as well and seeing a lot of different things and a lot of different coverages, I think that, you know, he's just done a really nice job of continuing to learn and continuing to make improvement.
Here with Coach Zach Matthews of the Bedford High football program. And you talk about some of the improvements that Joe's made. But the other one who threw a pass for you last Friday night was Sean Green. His older brother, Tim, caught a couple of touchdowns, 48 and 24 yards. Sean threw one for 83 to Joseph Leary. What's it like having the two of them both on the team? And, of course, Liam, the older brother, has graduated and is in college. They're all extremely athletic. And will we see a green-to-green connection this season?
I think it's a special opportunity for those two guys, obviously. You know, I think when you look at one's a senior and one's a freshman, you know, even speaking obviously from a coach's standpoint, we didn't expect to have them both playing varsity football this year. And then when you look at just kind of the way the preseason went and with how well, you know, Sean is developing as well as a quarterback and with what Tim's doing for us, I think it's a special experience for those two guys to be on the same team. They've definitely made some connections in practice. I think, you know, as far as are they going to have a connection in a game, I think that obviously be something that would be really special if that happens. You know, There's not, that's something that we're probably not going to plan for at this point, but if the opportunity arises, I think that would definitely be something that would be great for the family.
I will tell you, having coached Sean in Little League and having gotten to know the family, he's a special athlete. He's a wonderful kid too, as I'm sure you've gotten to experience.
Yeah, I mean, and I can't say enough about, you know, the job he's done in the preseason. I mean, that's the thing with these young quarterbacks we have in our system. They've done an excellent job kind of absorbing what we're trying to do, you know, really trying to take advantage of their skill set throwing the football. And yeah, we're excited about the future.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Both quarterbacks looking great, especially with those long passes. So how about the defensive side of the ball? In that performance against Memorial, what were some of the pros and cons defensively that stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up. I think there was some good and there was some bad, you know, and I think we're always looking for ways to get better with our kids. And so, you know, first talking about, you know, the good things, really, we didn't give up, you know, long drives or any big plays like that. But I think that keeping, you know, things in perspective, we definitely gave up a touchdown after a sudden change situation. You know, we had the strip sack hit from Memorial, made a nice play, and had the strip sack on Joe Michael. And that was a big play for Memorial. And so that's definitely one thing we'd like to improve on. There are going to be times throughout the season where, you know, whether it's a fumble, whether it's an interception, something doesn't go your way and it's a sudden change situation and our defense has to come out and respond. So, you know, I think that's definitely something we'd like to see the kids focus on, is if we do have that adversity strike, you know, when we get out there defensively, we've got to kind of shut that drive down. You know, and then the other things, I think there were some counter runs. I think the one touchdown run was a counter play where we weren't really, we kind of moved a little bit too hard with flow, and we weren't really staying home a whole lot. So I think that there's always things you look at, but those are kind of a couple of things we talked about. Playing the counter a little bit better, and then the sudden change situation. We just have to embrace that sudden change situation and kind of having our backs against the wall as a defense and coming out playing a little bit better in that scenario.
Yeah, and those sudden changes really do come quickly in high school football. I've noticed that the pace of the game is quicker than, say, the NFL. I mean, you don't have a 2.5-minute commercial break after a turnover. It's like the teams are out there ready to take the next snap in about 20 seconds.
Right, and it's 20 seconds, and a lot of times it's after, you know, turnovers and plays like that specifically are huge momentum plays in high school football games. And so for our kids to be able to, you really have to kind of shut off that emotion or shut off that feeling of, you know, getting down on yourself or those negative thoughts after the turnover or after that adversity strikes, and you really just have to flip the switch. So, you know, that's one thing that I think will pay dividends down the road, having an experience like that where, hey, we had to flip the switch last week. I don't know if we were necessarily as focused when that sudden change situation. So that's definitely something we'll look to improve on, and I think that hopefully we can get the kids to respond well to that.
Now, today the team is playing at Gill Stadium in Manchester, and the Bulldogs got to play there during the preseason this year in the Queen City Jamboree. Will that experience help prepare your team for tonight's game at all?
I got to be honest, I don't really think so. I mean, I think our kids are comfortable going over there and playing football. I mean, the thing that we try to talk about with our guys is we're only guaranteed 9 opportunities, you know, to play football during the season. And so each one of those opportunities we have to cherish. You know, I think the piece about kind of knowing where facilities are and that stuff, sure. I mean, it'll be nice for the kids to know where the bathrooms are and whatnot, but I really don't think it's going to have a huge effect on the product you see on the field, I guess is what I would like to say. You know, our kids are most comfortable when we're playing at home, and anytime you have to go on the road and play somebody else, I think that's got to be a different mindset and you got to have a different focus. So, you know, we like to go into every road game with a different mindset, and that's what we're focused on for tonight.
We're joined by Coach Zach Matthews of the Bedford High football team, and tonight at Gill Stadium, you are facing off against Manchester Central. What do you expect the keys of the game to be tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for us, we'd like to get off to a good start. I think last week we started a little slow, and you know, I think tonight, as you start to get into the second half of the season, I mean, this is the midway point for us. You know, you got to start fast and you got to finish strong. And so we've talked a lot with the kids about starting fast and finishing strong. I think coming into a game like this, you know, Central had a little bit of a heartbreaker last week. They lost to Wyndham 28-21, and it was a kind of a funky play at the end of the game where Wyndham recovered a fumble and in the end zone to kind of get that separating score. And so I think for us tonight, you know, they've probably got a little bitter taste in their mouth in their game last week. For us, we just got to come out and you know, get after them on the scoreboard right away and you know, kind of make a statement in that first quarter and let them know what to expect, if you will. So, I mean, we talked about that, and I think then the other big pieces are, you know, when you talk about Central, I think they've got a good power running game in the I formation, so we're going to have to do a nice job stopping the run. And then the other part of that is they like to take some deep shots outside. They have had some success last week taking those deep shots outside against Wyndham, and so definitely keeping the ball in front of us and making them kind of drive the ball down the field, if you will, and kind of earn their points is going to be important.
Well, Coach, as always, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to join us, and good luck tonight.
Yeah, thank you. Look forward to seeing you guys there.
Wonderful. That was Coach Zach Matthews, the head coach of the Bedford High football program. Always a pleasure to be joined by Coach Matthews, and you've had the opportunity to see the team on a number of occasions so far this season. Looking good in the early going, really not missing a beat.
No, they really aren't. And, you know, during the broadcast, we've talked about Bedford's stout run defense. That's been a major factor all season long. We didn't get to talk about that too much. I mean, you talked about the counter working last week against Memorial, but that's really just one play. And so, in general, I think, as you could kind of tell, Coach Matthews very happy with the defense overall, the run defense that has stood out. But to me, really, it is that offensive passing game, because in week one, they weren't clicking. They didn't need it because the rushing game was so strong. But 3 weeks in a row, all of a sudden, they look like actually a high-powered offense that can beat you with the pass and the rush. So I think he's got to be very happy with how that's developed.
Makes a lot of difference when you have different facets, and it's far harder to prepare for a team that can pass the ball effectively and run the ball effectively. So see what happens tonight. Central always provides a bit of a challenge for Bedford, but they may just be outmanned. The Bulldogs roster is deep, really top to bottom, and there are a lot of really seasoned football players that haven't seen a ton of time this year. So that goes back to something we talked with Coach Matthews about a few weeks ago. The overall strength of the youth programs here in this town continues to be at a really high level. So we'll see where things shake out. And of course, the nine games, as he alludes to, the nine games that you're guaranteed, those are important, but the more important ones are the ones that follow. Like, what happens in the playoffs? That's, I think, where he's got his sights set, and that's where the players have their sights set, too. So, looking at some other fall sports, your favorite, golf, still cruises on. I was looking at some of the recaps, and I guess my mind is blown because I look down and CJ Ledoux, all of a sudden, who, when we first started doing this, was he a freshman when we started doing this? That was 17.
I think he must have been a sophomore.
He was a sophomore. So, CJ Ledoux is a senior now. We're all old. And he's, again, cranking, putting up some very good, very low numbers. But the other thing that is an interesting footnote on the golf front, it's interesting to see names recur. So Sean Toscano is golfing. Of course, you know, Ryan from lacrosse and from football. But Sean is golfing and shot a 40 a few weeks back. And Shea Lucantoni, who no doubt finds it easier to hit a golf ball into a hole than to kick a football through the uprights.
Yeah. So, well, that's the fun thing. The golf ball is always stationary.
Yes. And there's nobody larger than you are running in your general direction while you're trying to kick it.
Yeah. You mean your biggest opponent is the wind.
And yourself is your biggest opponent.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. But anyway, the golf team is doing well. We've attempted to have Coach Dan Colburn on, but haven't been able to sync up the schedules, hoping that we'll be able to do so. But again, we talked about it earlier. It's tough when these guys are teaching, because sometimes we don't sync up with them in the event that we're actually doing real work in a given week. So golf is one that is cranking right along, and we'll be sure to keep you updated about. Another one is girls soccer that has had a really nice run, with the exception of one game, a 4-0 loss to Londonderry. But if you talk to Coach Winning after that game, there were some lapses on their end, and really she kind of looked at it and said, by all rights, this could have been a 1-0 game and didn't feel like a 4-0 game. We've talked about it with her in the past, and we've talked about it with other coaches. It's what can you learn from that midseason setback that puts you in a better position at the end of the season?
Yeah, certainly with the random bounces of the ball and deflections and spins in soccer, crazy things can happen, and a 1-0 game can become a 4-0 game. And It's all about how you respond to it. And Coach Winning has done that with her squad. They came out and beat Goffstown in the next game out 2-1. And, you know, the impressive thing there is that they not only came back from that defeat, but they are now playing without Mackenzie McEachern.
Yes.
And that is a major blow to a team in terms of strategy, performance, execution, but also a team's mentality to lose a player that's so key. And so to be able to come back from that mentally and win against a tough Goffstown team, that's really impressive.
Right. Mackenzie is a top-notch player. She can really do a lot with the speed. And it's you have to be prepared when you're coaching at really any level that you may lose an impact player and you may lose them for a period of time. The team has depth, that's for sure, but it's really tough to replace that player on offense.
Yeah, and you could tell that Coach Winning was experimenting with some different combinations. The one thing going into the game in that first game without Mackenzie that she knew was that she had that core midfield strength, and she talked about it when we interviewed her. She talked about how Ellie Flynn is a ball winner, and she talked about the importance of fellow captain Gabby DeAngelis. And what was fun to do that first broadcast was to see them roaming the midfield and playing just as Coach Winning described. I mean, Ellie Flynn is just so aggressive and will challenge for every 50-50 ball. And it's the type of thing that can inspire teammates to watch a player playing that aggressively, having no fear. So those two were fun to watch. And then I think the X factor was this defender, Ava Siminovic. And Coach Winning mentioned her on the broadcast as anchoring the defense. But in this game, she moved her all over the field. She started out on the defensive end and sort of like Ellie Flynn was very aggressive, winning all the 50-50 balls. But then over time, she moved up on the attack and she played a lot of the second half as one of the strikers. And so I think Coach Winning is sort of experimenting with her in terms of where do we want to play her on the field, at what stages of the game. You know, what do we need the most? And so she moved her up when they needed goals and they were behind. And then at the end of the game, when it's 2-1 and it's the last 5 minutes and you want to make sure that Goffstown doesn't get an equalizing goal, she put her back on the defensive end again.
That's what you have to do if you're coaching, though. You take the opportunity to flex players around where they're going to be able to help the team. It's not necessarily where they're the most comfortable, but it's where they can help you win based on their skill set. I'd be remiss too. I've watched way more JV Bedford High School soccer than varsity soccer this year, because there are mutual friends of ours whose daughters play on that team. Wanted to give a shout out. There was a JV game versus Londonderry. The game winning goal was scored by none other than Anna Stavropoulos in that game, who then answered the next game with another goal.
That's right, her second goal.
So yeah, congratulations, Anna, on the big goals. It's always fun to watch the parents when the kid does something great, and you know, Nick's walking around high fiving everybody in sight. So it adds a little bit of flavor, a little bit of entertainment to watch in the game. So congratulations, the JV team is looking pretty good as well. Which for Coach Winning, watching those games, it's also a sign that what she has in reserve. Once she graduates some of these well-known players, they're going to be able to backfill pretty nicely and rebuild from within pretty quickly.
Yeah, and one of the other players who could be on that JV team but is playing varsity is the freshman goalkeeper, Zoe Santos. And she also has to be mentioned because she does not look like a freshman out there as a goalkeeper. I mean, she's running out and catching those balls that are just inside the 18. I mean, she's timing them perfectly, knowing when to come out of the net. You know, she's playing beyond her years, and she looks like a veteran back there. So, I mean, Coach Winning has to be thrilled with having her, you know, as a freshman to be able to, you know, anchor that defense the way that she is.
Yeah, Zoe is very athletic. I remember years ago coaching her in softball, and one who would dazzle you with her ability. And then they have another one who is a freshman who's had significant experience playing goal, and Grace O'Dell. So the future is bright for girls soccer here in Bedford. And we heard from Stuart Pepper earlier, who is very excited about what he's seen from his team. So I don't know. It's been a lot of fun on this show. We've had some programs that are doing pretty well. You know, you look at football, both sides of soccer. That's one loss and one tie among those three programs.
Yeah, and the golf team that you mentioned has they.
I don't think they've lost yet.
Maybe one match within a match, but overall, I think they might be in first place.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
Yeah,
it's not like going to the PGA Tour website where it gives you total winnings.
Yeah, the standings are a little bit different.
Right. And again, that's one where it really doesn't matter how you do in the season. As long as you're in the playoffs and your guys are tuned up at the right time, the regular season is kind of academic.
And those are coming up soon over in Goffstown, so we got to keep an eye on those and see if we can get some coverage of the squad.
Who are you caddying for in that?
Everybody?
Everybody. All of them. So we got like 2 minutes left. So NFL is still... I don't know. Part of me thinks that we're at a point where the NFL is so into whatever theatrics they can possibly throw out there. This week's indignation related to the Raiders, because this is really all we have to talk about. Vontaze Burfict suspended for the rest of the season. I didn't see whether he'd appealed it yet. I would figure he has to have.
I have not heard if he has, but I'm so glad that he got suspended for the season. Right when I heard that news, I was like, oh, thank goodness, because the guy is just a menace. He obviously has not learned his lesson.
Yep.
He thinks that his job is to go headhunting. And so finally, let's sit him on the sideline, and either he figures it out or teams decide we're not even going to sign you again. You're done. We don't need you anymore.
Yeah, that has been an odd footnote in this season, and the Raiders are almost going to the Raiders of old, where Burfict is in the role of Ted Hendricks or Jack Tatum, and Antonio Brown is in the role of somebody. I'm not entirely certain what, but and then of course for the Patriots now, they're without a kicker,
right?
And you fail to realize while it's going on what a luxury. I don't know, the last two decades have really been for Pats fans, first with Vinatieri, then with Gostkowski, that they've had guys who have been about as devoid of controversy and about as automatic as you can see in the NFL. Those two, we shrug our shoulders and we don't know who's next.
Well, the amazing thing about Gostkowski going down with injury is when you read the article, you see when he took over for the Patriots. I'd forgotten. It was 2006.
It was a while. Yeah.
It seems like it was just like, yeah, he's been there for 6 or 8 years, but he's been there for 13 years.
Somehow I looked, it was a couple weeks ago, and he's 36 years old. And
shocking.
I went, wait a second. Didn't they just draft him?
And oh, by the way, Vinatieri is still kicking.
Vinatieri's so, like 112.
He was a legend when he left the Patriots.
Vinatieri,
and he's been
like,
kicking for another 13 years.
It's like if Yoda were kicking. That's Vinatieri at this point. He's that old.
He'd be wearing a horseshoe on his head.
Right. I mean, he is wearing a horseshoe on his head. But, and Vinatieri had, because he's 47 years old, like, of course he's going to have some issues kicking because, you know, all of us start to have issues when we get into our mid-40s.
But then, you know, it sort of explains Gostkowski's issues, you know, uncharacteristically missing some extra points this year. Okay, he's got a hip injury. All right, so that sort of makes sense. And then it sort of reminds you, you know, this is not easy. Vinatieri and Gostkowski have made it look easy, but you look at Greg Zuerlein last night, was a 44-yarder to win on the road. Guy who routinely hits 55 to 60-yard field goals. He's got the, you know, Greg the leg.
Yeah.
Just an extremely powerful and effective kicker. And it's 44 yards out, and he's wide right. They lose the game. I mean, he had a chance to win the game on the last play,
yep.
And he misses.
I dare anybody to go stand on a football field, on an NFL field, and look at the distance between the two uprights and tell me that's easy.
Right. Especially in Seattle with the
it's
crowd.
A loud stadium.
It might be the best home crowd advantage in the NFL. And so that just, again, coming back to the Patriots, it just gives you that much more appreciation for all the clutch kicks that Vinatieri and Gostkowski have made.
Yeah. That has really been a luxury, and that will be a loss that, We'll see how they're able to fill in that roster spot, because it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, Mike Nugent doesn't quite give you the same feeling of expected success as those guys.
I had him on my college fantasy team a few years ago. He didn't help me out when he was at
Ohio
State.
He's 37.
Yeah.
He's been around for a while.
That was really that long? Oh, my God, dude. All right. Anyway. Thank you to our guests, Zach Matthews, the Bedford High head football coach, as well as Stuart Pepper, the Bedford High boys soccer coach. Thanks to Hanson for doing all the prep, getting ready for the show, for Darius for hanging out in the hallway, and for
crew here at Bedford 105.1 for all the help. As always, crazy sports weeks lie ahead until the snow hits the ground. So go rake some leaves. Have a great sports week. We'll catch you next time. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.